is the environmental director of the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, and she's with us today. Hi, Manager. Let's hear. Let's see if everything's working. Can you hear me?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. Everything seems to be working well. Well, I'm in the studio here with Richard Roth and also my co-host Sam, and we've got about a half hour. We'll be taking a break about 15 minutes, but just to let people know what the lineup is. I just wanted to ask you right off the bat, Manager, who you are and what the Clearwater is about. If you can tell us briefly.
My official title is Environmental Director for Hudson River Sloop Clearwater. Basically, I'm their policy person in the sense that, Clearwater's mission is to protect the ecology of the Hudson River and the well-being of the people that live in the Hudson River watershed, which is 13,000 square miles. It's from north of Albany all the way down to New York City. And we do that through education, advocacy, and celebration. One of the things we're famous for is our annual Great Hudson River Clearwater Revival, which is an environmental music festival, and it's way more than that. You know, it's all the arts. Good food and great camaraderie right on the Hudson River on Father's Day weekend. So that is the celebration part and the multiple concerts and so forth that we do. We have a program called Power of Song that we do with school children. And we do a lot of onboard education, primarily of school-age children right through fourth grade through 12, typically. But we also do direct action regarding issues such as the leaks at Indian Point or the PCBs in the Hudson River, and that is my job.
Okay. Well, Manager Green, you're here this morning to give us an update of on the PCB issue in the Hudson River. Which is, as you said, the artery of life for the Hudson Valley, starting from Lake Tear of the Cloud right down to New York Harbor. Can you tell us what PCBs are and a little history of how PCBs came to be in our river?
Yes. PCBs were used as an insulating oil in electrical equipment like capacitors and transformers so that they didn't overheat. And although it was known that they were toxic, they have an important industrial use, and they were used, they were discovered back in the 1930s. In 1937, Harvard did a study with rats showing that PCBs caused cancer in rats. But between 1947 and 1977, General Electric used PCBs in these transformers and capacitors. Mm-hmm. In the 1970s, the Clean Water Act was passed. It was known that there were PCBs that were either leaking or had been actively discharged into the Hudson River. And under the Clean Water Act, they were first told to limit their discharge, and then in 77, the PCBs were banned completely.
This is General Electric.
Over a million pounds, and now it may be closer to 2 million pounds, of PCBs had gone into the Hudson River and have been there since they started leaking in the 40s and were banned in the 70s, and now, 40 years later, we're still trying to get the PCBs cleaned up out of the Hudson River.
So Manager,
they have multiple health effects, and the way they get in human bodies is because people are eating the fish in spite of the fact that there are strict health advisories warning people either not to eat the fish or to eat very limited quantities, depending on what part of the river.
Are you saying that a very minute amount? Can you quantify that? If a woman was pregnant, I know that there's advisories for pregnant women not to eat fish with out of the river, and also maybe to limit fish intake to maybe two a month. I'm not sure exactly what those are, but so you're talking about what really minute quantities that if people ingest can have ill effects.
That's right. There's an eat none health advisory for women and children.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, and that's children up to 15. Women of childbearing age and children are, well, the fetus is most sensitive to the effect of PCBs. By the way, that stands for polychlorinated biphenyls. The effects are numerous. They have to do with neurological damage. They are known carcinogens. They first knew that they were carcinogenic to rats, but back in those days, they hadn't really cracked DNA code to know how similar humans are to rats. Some of us are more similar than others, also endocrine disruption, and in particular reproductive disorders. PCBs have traveled so far that the polar bear in the Arctic are not just threatened by global climate change, but the ice melting, but they're also unable to reproduce satisfactorily because PCBs have moved through a pattern of global transport all the way up to the Arctic and are found in high concentrations, surprisingly high, in polar bear who eat high up the food chain. But the primary route of exposure is by eating fish. Adult males in certain portions of the river are warned not to eat more than one fish meal per month.
Uh-huh.
And in the case of crabs, I believe that's per week. And it depends on the species, and there's a fairly complicated list. My advice is, until we get the PCBs cleaned up out of the river, the people just don't eat Hudson River fish. And there are exceptions, and those are the ones that spend most of their life out in the ocean, like shad, and only come back to spawn.
Okay.
PCBs in their system is pretty low. But for Hudson River fish that live in the Hudson River, it's really advisable not to eat any Hudson River fish.
Well, Amanda Jo, can you give us a brief, or tell us what the recent history was in affecting the GE cleanup? I mean, I think it took something like 20 to 30 years of litigation, or am I completely off base with that?
No, you're totally correct on that. There were various delay tactics. There was a period of time where they thought that they could come up with organisms that could break down in the river, and they tried to do that unsuccessfully. There are ways of treating PCBs, but not site, not in the river. You have to dredge it and then treat it. And EPA has decided the treatment is too costly, but that dredging is necessary. And so in 2001, after a lot of legal battles the science won out, and the Environmental Protection Agency announced that they would require GE to clean up the river. In 2002, an official record of decision was issued, and then we went through a design phase that lasted right up until 2009. The spring, summer, and fall of 2009, last year, was the first phase of the dredging. and a lot of PCBs were removed, but the big surprise was that more PCBs were found in the river than the core sampling had predicted.
Amazing.
And that was because there was a thick layer of woody debris that they thought was the bottom of the river, but it was highly contaminated. When they went in, they had to remove that, and then they found more PCB-containing sediment underneath that layer. So there was almost twice as much PCBs in some than previously expected.
Amazing. So the dredging started, the dredging started about, a year and a half ago? Or above the Troy Dam?
May 15th, 2009. I will never forget that day. Because so much work went into accomplishing that goal. And the work was done by, underfunded, well-intentioned environmental organizations and grassroots groups and General Electric spent, we estimated, about $100 million, which at the time we thought was one-fifth of the cost of the cleanup, on advertising and legal battles to try to prevent that. We thought that once the record of decision was issued, they would just obey it and move forward in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, they have. But unfortunately, behind the scenes, they are still trying to say that the cleanup is a disaster and that it's doing more harm than good. And we should either just let the river clean itself up, which is impossible and not happening, and there's good scientific proof of that, or cat more and dredge less. They want to get in and out quickly, and our group feel that this is the one and only chance that the Hudson River is going to be cleaned up and the PCBs that have plagued it for so long removed. Mm-hmm. This means that, for example, the areas where the concentrations are high, which is all the 40-mile stretch north of Albany, in those areas, in those areas, they are dredging, and we want to be sure that they get it all. Or not to the very last molecule. There are areas that they will have to cap, but we don't want to see areas that were originally slated for dredging to be capped because General Electric is pushing for a quick and dirty solution that is not a solution at all. It's a partial solution, and given that there's no other chance to get this done well and get it done right, we think it's very, very important that the first time they do it right. And they learned a lot from the first phase.
Manitou.
A lot was happening in the first phase than we would have liked. But we don't want to see that happen in the second phase.
We're gonna get right to that. But Manitou, I think we have to go to a very quick break, and we'll come right back, and then we'll talk about those phases that you're talking about. And you stay on the line. You'll hear some music, and we'll be right back with Manitou Green, Environmental Director of the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. with Manajo Green, Environmental Director of the Hudson River Clearwater, the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater. And Richard has a question for you, Manajo. Are you still there?
I am, and I'm looking forward to answering them.
Okay, great. Hold on.
The question I have is, you mentioned a few minutes ago about people saying that it was going to do more harm than good. And I know that people were concerned that maybe these PCBs would get stirred up. Is there some sort of monitoring that goes on as to what's happening in the water now?
You bet. There's really rigorous monitoring right at the dredge site, which they call the near field, and then at several points further away. So if they were working up in Fort Edwards, they were watching the water levels of PCBs very carefully at Fort Edwards, but also down at Waterford. Now, Waterford and Half Moon were put on an alternative water supply so that there was no way that if PCBs were stirred up that it would get in their drinking water. McKinsey takes its drinking water from the Hudson, and there was never an elevation due to the dredging at McKinsey. There were some concerns. There were three instances over the summer where the level from the dredging rose to where they had to either stop everything or slow down to reduce the amount of PCBs that were getting resuspended. Some PCBs are inevitable. There is going to be some resuspension. There's no way to dredge a river without, but they're looking at a 1-2% resuspension rate, 2% closer to the site and 1%, down at Albany, as a limit, and they believe that that is an achievable target. So during the first year, because they had all these surprises, and also because it happened to be last year was a year of high rainfall and a very fast flowing turbulent river. Mm-hmm. So they faced a lot of challenges. Mm-hmm. There was sediment resuspension in the areas within a couple miles that actually showed up in the fish briefly, but they returned to baseline as soon as the season was completed, and they have all that fish data now. The fish further downstream were unaffected. The fish in the lower Hudson were unaffected. And that is the major route of exposure, not the only route, but the major route of exposure. The sense was that to get that 98 or 90%, 99% of PCBs out of the river, it's worth a cost of 1-2% resuspension. And by the way, most of the sediment that was resuspended, because they're working from a north to south direction in the direction of flow, and that river is not, that portion of the river is not tidal. Mm-hmm. The PCBs that were suspended fell back down to the bottom of the river in areas that are yet to be dredged. And we believe that that is what happened to the majority of them. So they were resuspended briefly and were either re-cleaned up right then or, if the next line of dredging didn't get them, then they moved further downriver into an area that is likely to be dredged. Now, that is not 100% true. Some PCBs would end up outside of dredge areas, the areas either being dredged or to be dredged. Mm-hmm. But very, very little of it made it downstream. And we are relieved at that because the area between Albany and New York City is not slated for dredging. Mm-hmm. The dredging will take place where the hot spots are in the upper Hudson.
Manajo, I just want to interrupt because we've got about 5 minutes left, and we want to get to what you're asking people to do right now. But I just wanted to reiterate the importance of actually thoroughly cleaning the PCBs out of the river within the next minute, if you could talk about that, because I know that PCBs have, I don't know about a half-life, but they don't degrade. They can be in the river for hundreds of years. So it's really important to get rid of them. A case in point is a situation off of San Francisco. They're finding that California condors, who are making a wonderful comeback, actually are suffering from the thinning of their eggshells again because of a tremendous amount of pesticide that was dumped in the bay in the 60s is still affecting in 2010. 50 years later, is still affecting those birds and their eggshells. So that these toxins stay in the environment for long periods of time. And I think it's an important argument to say that that's why they have to be thoroughly cleaned out. You can't just let it sit. So if you can address that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they call them persistent organic pollutants. Mm-hmm. And in the case of PCBs, we have two things that we're asking people to let their legislators and congressional representatives know and let EPA know and let GE know. And one is that we don't want GE to opt out of phase two of the cleanup. We want them to take full responsibility.
Okay.
There are legal penalties that are very severe if they do opt out.
Okay.
But we want them to opt in and take that responsibility. And we want them to remove the PCBs, not cap them, to the greatest extent possible. There are certain exceptions where they have to cap over them, but those are very limited. And so it's opt in and dredge, get the PCBs out, and then we will have Hudson River restored as close as possible to its original health and safety and beauty.
Manna Jo, we just got a brief couple of minutes, and we have a question that just came in from a listener. And the question is, will the proposed power line in the Hudson River from New Baltimore South resuspend the PCBs if it is placed in the river?
Yes, it's not proposed to be placed in the river for the areas that are planned for dredging. They're going to bypass the river for that stretch. But it is proposed for the river from Albany down to Yonkers. And we have serious concerns about disturbing the river for several reasons. And one is they're monitoring the entire river. They're monitoring the work sites. They're also monitoring the effects on the lower Hudson. They want to put that line in right away during the dredging season, and that could be the next 7 or 9 years. It would confound the monitoring of the lower Hudson. And we think that there's a lot more opportunity to put the sources of renewable energy they want to ship down from Canada, put it in place closer to the New York metropolitan area. Have us generate our own and become energy self-sufficient by switching or putting the infrastructure for more renewable energy in place locally rather than transporting it.
Right, the bigger picture. Manna Jo, thank you so much. We're just about out of time. So once again, if people want more information about what they can do or how to contact you, how do they do that?
They can call me directly at Clearwater, 845-265-8080, extension 7113, or go on our website. It's rich with information, and it's just www.clearwater.org.
Manna Jo Green, thank you so much. And I want to just thank my co-host, Sam, for engineering this segment. And I want to thank Richard Roth for being with us this morning. And again, Manna Jo Green, thank you so much for being with us. Stay on the line, and we'll go out with our theme music. This is Tell It Like It Is. Tune in next week on Thursday. at 10 o'clock for more Tell It Like It Is.
Thank you.